Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Talking Puck Podcast. Tom Callahan here, set to be joined by Mike Haynes as we get ready to talk some hockey here, and wanted to do this on a Wednesday, which is the day this is dropping, after getting each round a game in. So Monday we had four, Tuesday we had four. Now Mike and I get to take a look back and, you know, have fun with our knee-jerk reactions and all kinds of fun stuff with that, but some interesting things that have happened in these playoff series. So we are going to go conference by conference. We'll talk the West, we'll talk the East, give you our thoughts on what's going on so far, and there have been some pretty interesting things. Plus, you have to listen for when I poke check Mike right in the middle of the podcast. I just get the stick out there, knock the puck off his stick. You'll have to catch the moment, but it's pretty entertaining. All right, everybody, stick around. Talking Puck Podcast starts right now. Hello, everyone. Welcome into another edition of the Talking Puck Podcast. Tom Callahan and Mike Haynes here with you, and we are talking about playoffs. You always get to say that around playoffs, don't you, Mike? It's a great time of year. We're talking some hockey here, and we're recording this Wednesday, Mike, specifically because we wanted Monday and Tuesday to go by and have every single round have one game in. And so, in a way, we get to kind of look back at what we thought we knew and see how it compares to what we actually know. And I thought it was a great opportunity to pause and take a look. So we're going to go by conference here. We'll maybe do the Eastern Conference in the first half of the podcast, Western Conference in the second half of the podcast. So, Mike, I'll just open it up to you, whatever series you would like to start with in the East. Where do you want to lead?
I can't believe I thought for sure you're going to go. I told you so. Washington and Florida. I thought that's where we would start.
I thought I'd let you do that for me, but thank you. It's only one game, but yeah, I look.
I know. You called it.
I look like I knew something.
Absolutely called it. Yes, you. Yes, you did. That was. I doubted you. I didn't. I thought, Florida they got too much. But you think that this is a real possibility for an upset, and boy, oh boy, that's that was an interesting one. I mean, there's some great series to talk about. I mean, it's so fascinating to me always, and you and I have been involved with teams at the start of playoffs, and it's so funny. At one game, it's life or death. It's just like, oh my goodness, you're either on top of the world or you know, everything's caving in around you, the end is near. It's just fascinating to read, to hear, you know, how one team feels after one game. And that first game, I we'll get into each of the series, but I thought it was epitomized by in the first period, again, Tampa and Toronto, two teams with some pretty good firepower. And to me, the playoffs were exactly what we saw in that first period, Tom. I think through the first 10 minutes, there were only three shots on goal total.
Yeah.
It's such a change in the way that hockey gets played. Nobody wants to make a mistake. Guys, other than the superstars, guys get on the ice. They want 30 seconds. They don't want to make a mistake. They're just thinking defense, 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 and get off. And don't want to be on the ice, get scored on. And therefore, you don't have much a lot of times at the start of a playoff series, and especially game one in that first period. Boy, I thought it was epitomized by that Tampa Bay Toronto. But once things get rolling, then it starts to be fun. I think, you know what, I liked, you know, we're going to certainly pat you on the back about Washington and Florida, but we got to talk triple overtime hockey. Come on. That's got to be the first thing we're talking about. Pittsburgh, New York, and in Madison Square Garden, it's, you know, you got a heck of a goaltender. 79 saves, and you don't get the win. And do you know that the all-time number one, now he's now number three in terms of most saves, right, made in a playoff game there. And number one, Korpisalo, he also lost in a game against Tampa Bay. He holds the record, I think, 84. So first and third, most amount of saves made in a playoff game ends up in losses. I thought that was kind of a weird stat.
It's certainly a disappointing stat. Boy, that hurts if you're the goalie. What else can I do, guys? What else can I do?
Right.
That's a great start. Rangers, Pittsburgh. Casey DeSmith pulls himself in the middle of the second overtime, and now it's Louis Domingue. We know Tristan Jarry is not playing soon.
Right.
We don't know what's going to happen with Casey DeSmith, because even if he says he's good to try to start game two, what if this happens again? So Louis Domingue, the much traveled southpaw netminder, comes in, and I mean, for having zero time, you've been sitting on a bench not for two and a half periods. Four and a half periods of hockey, Mike.
I know.
And he did a great job. Now, there were a couple of saves where he was getting the tip of a limb on it. He was a little off on his positioning, but he made the saves. Give him credit. Mm. So, you know, I look at that and say, boy, the Penguins, that was a bit of a horseshoe game. They got lucky that things worked out the way they did. And then, of course, the winning goal, you know, bounces in, deflected off of Malkin. And that's, you know, another... You look at this Penguins team, and every year, Mike, it's funny because I was on a radio show that reaches that Pittsburgh market, and we were talking about it earlier this week, and I said, you know what? I've been trying to bury this Penguins team for 3 years, and I just can't do it. And the Rangers, I thought, were one of the best teams in the East heading into this playoff series. Pittsburgh just, they rise to the occasion. They've got the veterans. Jake Guentzel looked really good. He stepped up his game big time. And then, you know, like you say, it's interesting. The Capitals, I thought, did this too, but the Penguins knew they don't have top goaltending right now. They have okay goaltending. They really rallied around trying, I thought, to protect their goalie as much as possible against a really, really good Rangers attack. It's a tough thing to do. And both teams, let's face it, both teams were just getting lots of chances in this one. But wow, credit to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I thought, thinking about it, who would you want in today's day and age, that goaltender? Boy, I'll tell you what, though, you make 79 saves, even though we got the loss. Boy, Vasilevsky, I think, is still number one, but boy, that Ranger goaltender, he might be the guy, though. If you think I got to win a game, Pittsburgh's gonna have they're gonna win this series. They're gonna have to go through him. Wow, it's Rangers are still too good a team, I think. But this does have the makings of a six game, at least a six game series, doesn't it? But it was fun to me to get off to a triple overtime game in game one. Yeah. Oh, it's just such a great way to start. It's just such a fun way to start. But, you know, Pittsburgh, when you got Sidney Crosby, got guys like that, Malkin, those kind of guys who've been through it, won some cups, and maybe, look, they're smart enough to understand there's only so much time left, and do they got enough left to make a run? I just think the Rangers are too much. I think the Rangers are too talented. But a lot of credit goes to Pittsburgh for hanging in there and getting that win in game one.
And the guy leading the entire game in ice time heading into that final OT period, Chris Letang. Mm-hmm. Another oldie but a goodie for that Penguins team. But you wonder how much does that type of effort and exertion right away in game one take a toll on those Penguins veterans as we go through.
Oh, yeah. Or does it give them life? I mean, does it, you know, it's got to be exciting.
Sure.
The next day, because most of the time in the playoffs, you've got a day between games. That's generally the way that it works. Man, is there anything more fun than being at practice that next day after you win an overtime game? That is just you're just on cloud nine. You're skating on the air, and it's just fun, and especially third overtime. Oh my goodness, that's a fun locker room. It's a fun environment. It energizes you. It makes you feel younger, alive. If you're the Rangers, you know that's tough. But I think the Rangers know that they're overall the better team, and this is where your coaching has to come in. This is where your coaches get paid to settle, you know, just let's not panic time. One game, Let's just keep playing our game. It's going to be fine. So, you know, Pittsburgh, it's just got to be jubilant. It's got to be fun going to the rink today for the Rangers. That's a coaching staff that's just got to just lift the guys back up and get back at it and have a good start the next game.
You know, I want to jump right into, you were talking about Andre Vasilevsky. Toronto dismantles Tampa Bay in game one. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I got to give credit. Marty Baron all week has been saying on various programs, you know, radio and TV, hey, Vasilevsky's numbers have been below the league average since January, and he was not mm-hmm. convinced. And I give him credit for really recognizing what he thought he saw in Vasilevsky. It's not a popular opinion, but Vasilevsky, I can't blame him for every goal, obviously, in that game. Things happen. But man, Toronto looked sharp, and I thought that Vasilevsky, who's normally been the kind of guy who gives you saves that maybe he shouldn't, and that's what helps you win games, Mike, he wasn't there for them in game one. And I know you're still high on that horse. You know, is he poised for a bounce back, or is this the other thing we've been talking about? Finally, Tampa Bay, are they running out of gas?
Yeah. It's going to happen. They it's inevitable. I said from the start of the season that Tampa Bay will not win three cups in a row. It's just too hard this day and age. And two things, when will the team as a group run out of gas? And then two, Vasilevsky at some point is going to get hurt. He plays every game. And the way that they play, you know, he's got to come up with some big saves. And at some point, you're just going to run out of gas. And does Toronto? I don't know if Toronto, with Campbell, if they can win this. And I thought it. And it's not about Matthews necessarily scoring a lot of goals. Now he's a 60 goal scorer. He's the guy you're counting on. For me, in the playoffs, it's not how many you're scoring; it's when you're scoring goals. It's about being clutch. Let's say Toronto was down 4-0 and Matthews scores a goal in the third period, becomes 4-1. Okay, he scored, but that goal didn't mean anything. It's how meaningful the goals are. And I thought those were meaningful goals for Matthews. And that shows me something. If you can come up clutch and score big goals, that's where you separate stars from superstars.
And the other thing, too, Mike, is Toronto's defense, which the only move they made was getting Mark Giordano, and he's on their third pair. But what Toronto's defense is now is deep, and I don't think anybody really focuses on Toronto's defense. Tampa didn't score. That's the other impressive thing in this game. The Lightning, right, for all their offense, for all their weapons, could not beat Jack Campbell. And I don't think Campbell had to go crazy in this game. He just had to be solid, and he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and if you can get the goal scoring, Marner, he's got to get going. But, you know, and it's been a while since he's scored in the playoffs, so that was for Toronto fans. That was good to see. But you know, you got to have your number one stud going, and Matthews did. He scored two goals. You know, if he's going to do that, now he's not going to score two goals every game. But what you want is that big goal. As I said, you want it when you need it. And if you can't have a guy scoring 60 goals in the regular season and then he can't buy one in the playoffs, that's not going to work. Your stud's got to come through big time, and he did. And boy, for Toronto, now again, remember this, that's they finished ahead of Tampa in the standings. So I mean, that's a nice home win for them. They got to be feeling good. I can imagine Leafs Nation is just going nuts right now in Toronto, so that's fun too. That's really fun, and we'll keep an eye as we go through the next week of is Tampa Bay. Did they just sort of they wait in the weeds and they're just too good and they'll pounce when they're ready, or are we getting the fumes? You know, in this in the tank on Tampa Bay, I wasn't sure this year. And maybe you have a thought on this, you know, because there were times where they dropped all the way down into trying to make it into the playoffs as a wild card and just eke to back to third near the end of the season. You know, is it a team that had, this is what happens, is it a team that has just had so many big games. It's hard sometimes to get up for games in February, January, when you played big games. And sometimes it's hard to get going again. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how Tampa Bay comes out for game two. If they come out roaring, then you go, okay, all right, this is a team that they're going to get going again. But if they falter and they can't seem to get their offense going, this might be the end of the run for this year for Tampa.
I actually am not going to pin that on game two, but I will pin it on game three. I feel like Tampa could go home down 0-2 and show up at home, win the next two, and we're back at even. But what are we going to get out of Tampa Bay? I mean, it's hard falling behind in the playoffs. You're right. I really am curious to see what they have left in the tank at this point. So, yeah, star players got to be star players, and they were nowhere to be found for Tampa Bay in game one. So the onus is on.
And how much I was saying before the playoffs began, I go, the Stanley Cup this year is Tampa Bay against Florida. They made both teams lost in the first.
I was gonna say,
what if we don't even have those two teams getting? You have the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning, and you've got the President's Trophy Florida Panthers, both losing in their first game of the playoffs this year.
And I did, I will just mention it. I did say Florida might be the team ripe for an upset here, but how about Washington? Because they really had to come from behind to pull this off. And, a guy I kind of overlooked, and it's because he's not my favorite player in the world, but Tom Wilson gets the Capitals going. And he really can be the straw that stirs the drink in many ways for this Capitals team. But in the third period, down 2-1, Kuznetsov, Oshie, and Eller. Boom, boom, boom. They end up with those three goals. And Ehlers was at the end into the empty net there. But, man, I tell you what, it's, Kuznetsov and Oshie, those are the guys you need to be on the scoreboard, along with your Ovechkin and, Wilson chipping in. That's another good one to see. Ovi only had an assist on Kuznetsov's goal in this game. So it wasn't that it had to be his show. And in a way, I think that bodes really well for the Capitals. They got offense from different places in the roster, different guys contributed, and it didn't have to be Ovechkin. And I think that, not that he's not going to contribute, but that to me is a formula for success for the Capitals if they can keep it up.
They're going to have to outscore Florida, aren't they? I mean, Florida, they just have the best offense in the NHL. And can they hold them down, four times and beat them? I don't know. I think Washington's going to give them a scare, and it's certainly possible that Florida is learning. This I've seen this with enough teams. A young team that has been built, and then they do very well in the regular season, and they don't know how to win in the playoffs. It might be a situation where Florida is still 2, maybe 3 years away from really figuring out how to win in the playoffs. I've seen this way too many times where teams that have been built, they're young, but they don't have guys on the team together who have won anything yet. And I wonder if that's going to be the Achilles heel this year for Florida, how quickly they can learn how to win in the playoffs. And was that a wake-up call for game one, or is that a confidence boost for Washington and just sort of slap in the face for Florida and they have to question themselves? I got a sense that they won't, because this is a team that had more comebacks than anybody else. You can get them down and they feel good about themselves. I would be shocked, Tom, if Florida doesn't come back with a big offensive game in game two.
And it will be interesting to see, Mike. And of course, I forgot to mention Tom Wilson had a lower body injury, did leave the game. We'll see what happens there. But guys play through a lot in the playoffs. But a couple things I wanted to mention. Number one, good for Claude Giroux getting on the scoreboard for Florida. Number two, Sam Bennett's goal was ridiculous. But number three, I also want to say, Mike, you were talking about the coaching of Florida all year long, and we haven't touched on that yet. Andrew Brunette was kind of thrust into the role mid-season, and seemed to handle the reins capably, guiding Florida to the President's Trophy. That's the regular season. But is part of this learning to win in the playoffs, does that also apply to a rookie head coach in Andrew Burnett?
Of course it does. It's a whole different animal in the playoffs. You are dealing with different psyches, and especially you're playing against a Washington team that has had some success in the playoffs with some of their core guys. They understand it. I know it sounds like I'm, overestimating what it's like in the playoffs, but I'm telling you, for folks who don't understand, it is really different the way that you play, the way that you approach the game. Everything just feels different in the playoffs, especially early on. And especially for guys like on Florida who don't have this kind of experience, it just is a different game, and they need to adapt pretty quickly and figure it out and get their offense going and start playing like they play. But it's a learning experience for Florida. I don't know if this is the type of team that is ready to take this all the way to, you know, the finals in the conference. Maybe this is just a learning year for Florida. I think we're going to see a little bit of makeup from the coach. Cause I said this earlier in the show that when you lose now, this puts a little onus on the coach. How does he get these guys back and ready for game two? You don't want to fall behind to zip and then have to go to Washington. So Burnett's got to handle this really well for getting this team ready for game two. You do not want to lose another one to Washington, find yourselves going to D.C. down to nothing in the series. So this is a real another example for Burnett of how good a coach can he be. I think we'll see in game two.
Absolutely. And don't forget, Mike does know what he's talking about from being around some really powerful Avalanche teams that won a couple of cups, you know, and made some other deep runs. I mean, you know, that's why we have you here, Mike, because, you know, you have that experience. You have that veteran savvy. But seriously,
I thought it was those good looks.
That's why this is a podcast right now. Two of us look like a cat just dragged us in front of the microphone and said, here you go. So, but in all seriousness, like it is different. It's a whole new animal. It's the playoffs.
It really is. It just is. And there's nothing, there's no substitution for playoff experience. There just isn't.
Yeah.
I got to see it firsthand. If they hadn't made the trade for Mike Keane and Patrick Waugh, they wouldn't have won in 96 because they had tremendous talent, but they didn't know how to win. And they brought guys in. And then they kept going to the conference finals in 97, in 99, in 2000, they went to the conference finals again, didn't win again until 2001. It's hard. It's really hard. And they went to the conference finals again in 2002 and couldn't get past that. So I got to see two Stanley Cups, but I got to see a lot of getting to the conference finals and not getting over that hump and how difficult it is, even with experienced, winning teams. It's hard. So I'm interested in Florida. They're a talented team. They're exciting to watch. They score goals. Bobrovsky can be a really good goaltender at times, but sometimes you just have to learn how to win in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I wonder, game two will be, I'm going to have a close eye on that one to see how they come back.
Well, let's wrap up our East with Carolina Boston. And I can actually sum what I thought I saw in that game. Carolina Boston is Carolina looks good and Boston looks old.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I Carolina, they're just solid. They're just a good team. There's not much weakness, get Anderson, fully healthy. That makes them even better. They're well coached. They're disciplined team. They do everything right. What they don't have is a superstar scorer, and you wonder if you get into a situation It's a 1-1. It's a 2-2 game in the third period. They don't have that guy. That might be their undoing at some point, right? I think that's what they're missing. It's just somebody who's just a goal scorer. And now you certainly can win games by committee, but boy, you like to have that ace in your back pocket, don't you? When you need a big time goal, and that's the one thing they're missing, I think, for Carolina.
Yeah, you look at the list of guys. So Seth Jarvis, Nino Niederreiter, Tuukka Teravainen, and Vinny Trocheck, and Andrei Svechnikov, the goal scorers in that game. Some nice names there, right? But out of those, who jumps out at you, Mike, is the guy who's like, I'm definitely putting that guy on the ice at the end of the game. And of course, Hurricanes fans will say, well, I could put any of them out there and be comfortable, which is nice. You can be comfortable. Mm-hmm. But it's not like you're putting Austin Matthews, Alex Ovechkin, that guy that you know is just going to shoot the puck and has a better than average chance of putting it in.
Yeah. Now, I did see personally Nino Niederreiter win an overtime game 7 game.
Yes.
I saw that when he was with the Minnesota Wild. But that being said, it was a great shot right over Varlamov's glove. But I will still stand by my statement that is the one thing that they are missing, is just that superstar goal scorer in a third period tie game, in an overtime game. Somebody who can just snap it and it it goes in. Certainly talented players, they just don't have that superstar that some other teams have. I'm not saying that prevents them from completely winning, but it is an ingredient that other teams have that they don't.
And since we were talking about goaltending the whole time, Antti Raanta looked just fine. Linus Ullmark did not. And that's one thing Boston doesn't have. When Rask retired, it left them with either a rookie or a guy who Ullmark never really broke in Buffalo, ended up in Boston, and now he's kind of got the starting job. I wouldn't be surprised if Jeremy Swayman is your game 2 starter. He kind of took the reins for a little bit for Boston in March, then couldn't handle it, and it defaulted back to Ullmark. But Boston doesn't really have a goaltender either. And say what you want about, and this could be the end of the road for a guy like Marchand, this is it. But I don't think they have the goaltending, Mike, to be able to win this series, let alone make a run.
No, they're not going to win the series. And as you said, I concur. They look old. They look like, they're just not as good a team total as Carolina is. Carolina's going to win. Carolina's going to win this series. And see, if you go back to Boston, maybe they can grab a game there. But Carolina's going to win the series, and especially if Anderson comes back, and that'll be that. I think this will be 5 games at the most when this is done.
Also, nice to not have the pressure to rush him back, Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice for Carolina. They can let him heal up a bit.
Sure is. Right.
Yep. All right, that's our look at the Eastern Conference. Mike and I, let's take a break. We're going to come back, talk about the Western Conference here on the other side of it. So stick around. There's more of the Talking Puck podcast on the way. Like what you hear, please like, subscribe, and follow. We're right back. Here at Talking Puck, we generate a lot of media on different platforms. Open Media's 4K download suite makes my life a lot easier, and it can help you too. Whether you need to download audio clips, convert streams to audio, which we do a lot of here, creating slideshows, or even need help with your social media accounts like Instagram and TikTok, there's something for everyone, from casual user to pro. Use our special link, bit.ly/4kpuck. That's bit.ly/4kpuck to receive a special discount of 25% off your purchase. That's bit.ly/4kpuck. Talking Puck is now on Signal to Noise Radio every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Signal to Noise is one of the fastest growing internet radio stations, and now they have merch. Help spread the word about Signal to Noise Radio with t-shirts, stickers, keychains, and more. Shipping is direct and free. $25 gets you a t-shirt, while keychains and swag packs start at just $7. Order today at stnradio.com/merch. And thanks for your support. Now back to the show. All right, time to have a look at the Western Conference here on the Talking Puck podcast. And as I said, Mike and I doing this on a Wednesday because we wanted each series to get one game in. And, of course, you know, Mike, it's always fun to just make knee-jerk reactions after one game in a seven-game series because everything is now written in stone. But, boy, I got to lead off with the one that I think hurts the most and really... I mean, if there is a game one that said, how are you coming back from that? It's Nashville losing to Colorado because they don't have Juuse Saros for what we've been told is the first two games of the series. I don't know if they're going to try to rush him back for game two, but as they said, you know, maybe a miracle recovery, but five goals against David Rittich. He gets chased out of the game. They actually played Colorado at 2-2. When they brought Ingram into the game, and, you know, I mean, the guy gets called up from Milwaukee, and he's probably their backup next year. I don't see them keeping Rittich, but, man, that was just such a bad start. And it's not all on the goalie. You know, there were a lot of defensive breakdowns caused by Colorado's speed, Colorado working him to the outside, Colorado exploiting holes in the defense and cutting through the lane, and just all these things that the Avalanche do and do well. I don't know that if Superman was starting in goal for the Predators in that game that they have much less of a different result. Maybe one or two fewer goals go in because there was a couple of softies in there, but they don't win that game.
No, they're not going to win a game. This will be a sweep, and then they're moving on. My only question before the series started was whether or not because of the coasting at the end of the season, they didn't go for the President's Trophy. They just kind of coasted, trying to get some guys healthy, get guys back in the lineup, and they didn't have anything to play for. And I just wondered if maybe it would take them a game or two to get going again. But Nashville they're not going to win a game. This will be a fast series. It'll be over. It might have been different if Saros had been healthy, stood on his head, made it tough on them to score. Maybe you can eke out a win or two, but this will be over fast.
It'd be crazy if Ingram starts game two, but I could see that. Ooh. I could absolutely see that. And big save Dave turned into no save Dave. No,
I was going to say it. Oh, I had it teed up. I was like doing I was in my backswing. Oh, darn it. We've been doing this show together too long.
We really have.
We have the same brains. I'm telling you, I just had the exact same line. I was waiting for you to take a breath so I could jump in. That's funny.
Oh, man.
That's great.
All right. Credit to both of us for having the same idea. All right. There you go.
Right. Right.
It was a battle of who was going to slide in there.
I just was hoping. All right, just take a breath. I'm getting this one. So I wanted you to sneeze with your allergies there.
Yeah.
And then I could have said
man, I'm having a heck of an allergy day. Yeah. But sorry, Mike. I didn't get the breath in time for you.
That's so funny.
That's
but
great.
It's too bad. For Nashville that you know they have some guys on the team that. It had good years, you know, they've never been able to win, Duchesne, this really got to be killing him. You know, he's a guy that wanted out because he thought the team was not going to win while he was there. And he basically wanted out. The team wanted him gone. And you know what? He went to Ottawa, Columbus, Nashville, and he may end up finishing up his career, never winning anything. And it just must be killing because I know him well enough. I really like him. He's a really, really nice guy, and just a good, strong family guy. Just I really like him. Loves hockey, but he miscalculated and he wanted out of there because he didn't think that they were going to win. And now it must be killing him to watch how good his former team is, especially compared to what he's on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that being said, he had a good regular season. Johansson had a good regular season. You know, they were.
Josie had a great regular season.
Josie could be the Norris Trophy winner. And Soros had a great season. But without the goaltender against an offensive juggernaut, you're not going to win a game. This will be over. I'm be surprised if it's not a sweep.
Well, the other series in that conference, Minnesota-St. Louis, might be waiting an extra week for them to finish. Colorado may be able to put their feet up because, now, mind you, St. Louis looked really good taking care of business in game one.
Yes.
But this is not, Minnesota's not rolling over and going away after that one.
No, but do they make a goaltending change? That's one topic I wanted to get into with you, because this is a year where we've got a number of teams that weren't quite sure which goaltender was going to start at the beginning of, at least as fans. I'm sure, you know, the coaches understood. But I mean by as fans, you're going, okay, who's going to be the starter in game one? I think there were a lot of question marks for who that was going to be. And, there was some sense of, what do you do? You paid a lot for Fleury. He's the guy. But you can't play him all seven games, which the series is certainly capable of going, and then go, okay, now we need you to go on to the next round, which is going to be even tougher. So you have to piecemeal him. So what do you do? You lose 4-0. Do you come back with Talbot, or do you come back with a veteran again? I got a chance to see this. I saw it with Patrick Waugh, where if he lost, he demanded that he got back in there. He couldn't wait to get back in the net. And I have a sense, I don't know him that well, that Fleury is built like that too. Oh yeah, okay. You know what? I'll show you. If I'm the head coach in Minnesota, I'm putting Fleury back in. I think he has something. I think he's got that something to prove mentality. And I would come back with Fleury. What would you do?
Man, that's a tough one, because a lot of me would probably go to Talbot in this situation. I do know Fleury is a battler, and he's a veteran guy. I think what would make the decision ultimately for me is how the team felt about it. Like, you can get that sense of the room, what the guys are feeling.
Oh yeah.
Because logically, I come back with Talbot in this one to give it a different look, to freshen it up, and also put a poker in my team's rear end and say, hey guys, you didn't play for Fleury. Now you know you have to play for Talbot. You better get this going. But you're right. Fleury is a battler. He's competitive. And it is the first round. You anointed Fleury your game one starter. If you want him to be the starter and the team to maintain confidence in him, you do kind of have to go back with him. I guess if it were me, I would lean towards Talbot unless essentially the team emotions vote otherwise. But if they come back with Fleury, that's not the wrong move. It's kind of nice, I guess, for Minnesota to have this luxury. But man, St. Louis just looked like the St. Louis of 2019 for the first time in a long time. They looked really, really good.
Well, you and I, so speaking of goaltending, you and I on Sunday night show batted around as St. Louis is another team of who should they start? Do you go? And I thought Binnington, only because he had been through the playoffs. He had won a cup. And we'll talk about Jonathan Quick a little bit, but that to me, I always think go with the veteran guy who's been through it. St. Louis didn't do that, and that looked like it was the right decision.
Yeah, and the only reason I picked Ville Husso over Quick Binnington when we talked about this was largely because just his play down the stretch this year, he was the better of the two. And I think he earned the right to start. And the thing is, when a guy earns that right to start, again, if we flip this and he gets lit up 4-0, you have no problem going back to Binnington saying, okay, well, we thought we were going to start the hot hand. It didn't work. But, you know, you look at this game, and it's funny, Mike, because I almost named David Perron my X Factor, but I didn't, so I can't give myself credit for that. But boy, how about David Perron? He just shows up in the playoffs, doesn't he? And,
he does.
Three big goals for St. Louis in this one, but I look at, you know, the Husso gave them the saves they needed. I don't think the Wild at any point made me look at them, and it's weird because it was a 37 save shutout, which is fairly busy. It's not like he had 22 saves, but at no point did I really feel like the Wild were going to break through and go on a run. I'm like, oh yeah, no, if they get this, then they're going to go. And they never got that one goal that could even possibly, you know, put a crack in the wall and go from there. So credit to St. Louis. They played an excellent, excellent game. They did it on the road at a difficult arena to win in, and the Blues look pretty darn good right now. It's only one game, but Minnesota needs a statement game in game two.
They do. They're and their scores have got to come through, and they've got a big decision in their goaltending. But St. Louis, boy, we've been talking about this for 2 years now after they won the Stanley Cup. What is wrong with St. Louis? Why did – and they have kept that core together. That is not – other than, you know, they Petrangelo, other than their number one defenseman, which is obviously is a huge, huge sure. change. But for the most part, as forwards, and they held on to Tarasenko. I think that a lot of people thought Tarasenko was going to go, or he wanted to go at one point. But, you know, if you can get him scoring and he can score some big goals in the playoffs and that mentality of knowing how to win, but the last 2 years, they just looked terrible. They looked disinterested in the playoffs. They don't now. They look like a team back on a mission. And they could really be a force. Now, I think Minnesota is so talented that this is certainly not a four-game series. This could go a little ways, but you know what? Whoever comes out of this is going to be playoff battle ready for the next round.
Yeah.
Whereas their opponent is just, you know, they're going to be home sitting in the easy chair watching these games. So it'll be interesting to see who comes out of this for sure. But it looks like St. Louis made the right decision for the goalie, and what I'll be watching for game two, at least at the start, is who gets the net for Minnesota.
Yeah. You know, and this series reminds me of a series that Joel Quenneville later on told Barry Trotz. Nashville and Chicago met in the first round, and Nashville gave Chicago everything they could handle. And that Preds fans will remember this. It was the Marian Hossa ends up with a penalty but wasn't ejected and probably should have been ejected from the game, but it was the playoffs for boarding Dan Hamhuis. Nashville didn't score right away. As soon as the penalty's over, guess who scores in the overtime? Marian Hossa, game over. But Nashville pushed Chicago as far as they could in that series. And Quenneville later said that he felt like Chicago having to battle through that series woke them up enough for them to go and run to a Stanley Cup win. I feel like that could be the case if St. Louis goes on a deep, deep run. They may look back at this Minnesota series and say this is the series that kind of woke them back up and got them right going again, because this is a tough, tough series. And it just kind of has that feeling for me. But again, as I say, you know, we really are going to have to wait and see what's going to happen and what kind of responses, Mike, we're going to get out of these teams, you know, come, you know, game two. And that's going to be an interesting one. So, but great, great hockey so far in the playoffs. And now we go to the Pacific Division. And let's start with LA and Edmonton. This is the you know, battle of the Gretzky here. I actually was a little concerned going into this that the Kings might not have had enough depth to hang with Edmonton and be able to prevent their scoring. But I will say, you teed it up with Jonathan Quick. You said if he's Jonathan Quick of old, he will give them a chance to win. And so far, so good.
Yeah, but this was another one. And we're going to be saying this through this recap of the playoff series. Who do you start? And, you know, I have the belief of you go with your veteran guy, unless he's really been usurped. But I he's got the experience. He's got two cups. And, man, he's really interesting because he plays, and I know you would appreciate this as a goaltender, he just plays the position so differently than other people. He's so low, isn't he?
Yeah.
Just the way that he plays, his style. Everybody else, it comes from the same, they're almost robots now, the way that they play. There's very few exceptions. But Quick is. He plays it different. And when he's on, whoo, boy, he's fun to watch. And he better be, because you got two of the best scorers in the game in Draisaitl and McDavid. But if Quick can play well, if they can take another couple sips from the fountain of youth, you know, they're going to give Edmonton a handful, but I don't know. The Mike Smith situation, your favorite goaltender in the league. What a miscue by him, huh?
Yeah.
How about that? He that poor guy, he just throws it up the middle. And then he makes a phenomenal save.
Yep.
Right? But then they can't get the puck out of the zone. Yep. And then they get scored on. Oh, my God.
It's funny because I had just made the comment. I mean, not 5 minutes before this happened. Said, and you know, Mike Smith is an aggressive puck handler. You live or you die by that. And that's what Smith is. And I said, I just had a feeling. I said, Smith's puck handling is going to lead to a goal against. You watch. Because he was, I felt like you could see he was trying to do a little too much. You know what I mean? He was just trying to do everything for them. And you feel a little desperate, maybe. You're pressing a little in a tight game. You want to make that hero play. You know, Mike Smith probably goes to bed at night thinking of himself with a, you know, 90-foot saucer pass to Spring McDavid on a breakaway. Yeah, it was. It was a puck handling miscue, and he bailed himself out initially. But as you say, Edmonton just could not clear the zone for the life of them. And I mean, you have Smith is one of those guys too. I mean, you know, he can get upset and lose his mental game too, which if I'm Edmonton concerns me. I don't believe Edmonton has any appetite to see Koskinen play playoff games. Mike Smith is their guy. But boy, if he takes himself out mentally and beats himself up over mistakes, that could really tilt things for the Kings because Quick doesn't do that. You know, as you mentioned, he plays that little water bug style post to post. He's low. That's why when he had groin and hip issues, everybody worried that his career might be over, but he's rebounded from that. But he's fast. He's athletic. He was Jonathan Quick of old. He was making those split saves. He was going post to post real fast. He was just daring shooters to beat him high in the heat of the moment, and they weren't doing it. So I'm not saying the series is over by any stretch, but I am saying those are a couple of interesting and key factors. But for LA, you know, Kopitar's still there. Brown is still there. I know Doughty's not playing, but you bet he's still around that room. Those guys are gamers. They are veteran players who know what it takes to win. They have the experience. They have the rings. So I think that, you know, again, what has Edmonton won? You can be wonderful in the regular season, Florida Panthers, but the playoffs is different. Right. So yeah, I don't know. That's just my look at it. If the Kings win this series, I'm not surprised. Do I want to see Edmonton Calgary in the second series? Yes. Will we? I don't know.
No. And you know, I can only imagine. I would think that Calgary's rooting for the Kings to win that series. I think they would rather play the Kings. Aside from fan interest and all that, of course, yeah. But in terms of just without Doughty, you might be able to sneak your way by Edmonton, but the Kings are, I don't know if they can beat Calgary, especially if Calgary has a good first round, good solid first round. That's a team, again, who they've got some experienced players, but they don't have, Tom, they don't have a core group that has had a lot of success in the playoffs. I mean, starting with the goaltender, he has not had a lot of playoff experience. Their scores haven't. That's a team that is going to, like Florida, is had a really good regular season, but they're learning how to win in the playoffs. It's going to be interesting to see how they do, you know, through this series, or how long it takes them if they do win the series against Dallas. What'd you think of that first game there?
I thought Markstrom looked pretty good, but what was more important to me was the Flames defensively. And I'm trying to decide, Mike, you have these games every once in a while. Was it Calgary's really good defense or was it Dallas's lack of offense? 16 shots for the Dallas Stars. You know,
they only have one line now. They have one line. That's it for Dallas. I mean, the Ben and Sagan and Radulov, they don't do it anymore. They don't, right, Tom? It's a one line team now in Dallas.
And that's the thing too. I was thinking about Dallas. Is we talk about the names we do talk about are older guys, kind of like they are with Boston. But then there's a couple other guys like, you know, Roope Hintz. If Dallas has any chance in this series, Roope Hintz has got to step up and be big. Yeah. You know, that's one of those things. And a guy they ended up keeping in John Klingberg. They did not trade him just because of the injury with Miro Heiskanen. You know, you miss a guy like Miro Heiskanen, and so Klingberg has to be the guy again, but he's a little bit older. And here's the thing. Klingberg's probably playing for a contract. He better show up. You know, mm-hmm. he needs to be an impact player here as well. I don't necessarily have a fault with Jake Oettinger. I thought he's fine. He's a good NHL goalie. He's established himself even though he's young. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that Dallas, there's no switch in the Dallas locker room that they can flip.
No.
They're going to have to find a way to be so much better against this Calgary team. And honestly, Mike, I look at this Calgary team and this is a team in the Flames that just, if they're able to focus and shut down. And look, again, I go back to they now have a Stanley Cup winning coach who mm-hmm. knows how right. to implement the strategies to shut other teams down, yet still, mm-hmm. we talked about this, Mike. I can't remember if it was the beginning of this season or it was when Sutter took over, but we said, geez, are their scorers still going to be able to score? Or is it going to be too right. much defense? Well,
right.
I think time has shown us that the offensive players can find a way to flourish within this system and still be able to play defense.
That was the big question when he took over late in the season, the year before. And we thought, you know, the Goodrows, it didn't seem like that's the kind of player, you know, that Sutter would like.
Right.
But you know what? I give him a lot of credit, Sutter. He has adjusted to today's game. Because you would think he was a guy that wouldn't be able to do that. You know, he's just set in his ways, and then this is how you're going to play hockey. A lot of credit to him. Because you got a talent like Goodrow, man. You don't want, you know. Sure, everybody's responsible for coming back into their own zone and doing things, but you gotta let the creative guys be creative and do things. And that, you can play as much defensive hockey as you want, but you've got to score some goals to win. And he lets his offensive guys do their magic. They're a really well coached team. They're fun. They're gonna be, you know, they should take care of business with Dallas. And I bet you they're rooting for LA to win that. I think that's a better matchup for them to face LA. And that Calgary looks like if they can keep gaining some playoff experience, and if Markstrom can get sharper and sharper, they're gonna be a team that has a good possibility of getting out of that Western Conference. But they're impressive. Dallas does not look good. I tell you what, when you look at the four wild card teams, only Washington, I think, has a chance to win their series. It's not going to happen in the West. Not going to happen in the West.
No.
Boston's not going to win their series. So Washington, I don't know. I think Florida eventually is going to be too much for them, but that'll be the longest series of any of the four series that involve the wild card teams. Let's look at goaltender changes then. Do you think Edmonton stays with what they look at the teams that have lost? We'll start back in the West. You think Mike Smith stays?
I do.
And let's see.
He'll stay in Dallas.
Yeah, they're not going to change there. Okay. Marc-Andre Fleury is a question mark. We don't know. Maybe do they come with Talbot or not? And then Nashville, are they really unhappy with no save Dave? Because they might, boy, they give it to the young kid. Let him see if he can do some magic, I guess.
I would put Ingram out there. He looked so much better than Riddick did. So
hey, you never know. Sometimes when you're that young, you don't realize what's going
right.
on. I'm in the playoffs. Really, playoffs? What? I just want to play.
Yeah,
and you don't understand maybe the what's going on. And then okay, back over in the East, teams that lost. Tampa's not going to make a change. Boston may make a change. And then let's see, Florida. You wouldn't change in Florida, would you?
No, I would leave Bob in. I would probably go to Swayman in Boston because I thought Ullmark was just so flat and unimpressive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then with the Rangers, no, you're not changing from Shesterkin. So
no,
yeah,
not a chance. So to me, the one that I'm most interested in, watching will be, what does Minnesota do? Do they give Flurry a chance to rebound, or do they go, we can't take the chance of going down 2-0 in this series and go to St. Louis? We go with Talbot. So that's the one I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be and Mike, out of every team that lost, here's my question. And we know, you know, the stats always favor the team that wins game one. Well, no kidding. You're closer to winning a whole series. But out of every team that lost, it's game one. And if you want, you could do one in the East, one in the West. Which series do you think has the biggest chance of having someone come back now to win?
Without a doubt, Florida is going to come back. And I still think, I'm torn between Edmonton and Minnesota. I think Edmonton. I just think that Kings are not that good a team, and I think Edmonton might be able to squeak out and get that series. I have no idea what's going to happen in that Minnesota St. Louis series. It really could go either way, and wouldn't surprise me whoever came out of there.
Yeah, St. Louis looks so good right now.
They look good, though. They look scary. They do. They. I think out of the two teams, just based on that game one, of winning that Central Division, they have the better. They might have the better chance over Minnesota of coming out of that division. Maybe I think they match up better. But again, I'm looking for to see what the goaltending. If Fleury comes back and just goes, all right, you know what, I'm Marc-Andre Fleury, and stands on his head, maybe that gets Minnesota going and changes things. But that'll be interesting to watch. I just think Florida's still too good. And I don't know. I bet you that I think they're going to tie up that series in game two.
All right, I'm going to pick the Rangers, especially in a bounce back against Louis Domingue, if he has to start, if DeSmith can't go. And then you've almost talked me out of Minnesota, but I'm going to go with Minnesota bouncing back on home ice and getting that one back to even. Although, man, St. Louis looks good. Ooh. If the Blues keep playing like this, I could see them beating Colorado. So
they'll give them a series.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they definitely will.
They will. My other prediction, I think. I don't think Dallas has got it. I'm just trying to think. The other thing, you know what we didn't talk about? I think Tampa Bay has got enough pride. I think they win game two. I think that they just have enough pride left that they're gonna even up that series.
My concern, if I'm a Toronto fan, I celebrate this win, don't get me wrong, because it's a massive win.
Oh, yeah.
But was that everything at once? Did you shoot your whole wad in game one? We'll see in game two, but man, I'd be a little... The one thing Toronto's got going for it is they do have home ice in this series, and that obviously was so important for them in game one. And again, it's going to have to be important in game two for them to go out there and have that kind of performance.
Yeah, I'm not ready to write off Tampa Bay yet. Not yet. I think they tie up the series.
So a lot at stake here, but we'll know again tonight. So we started off, and now we switch from the ESPN coverage to the TBS TNT coverage as far as national television goes. So make sure you're bouncing around and following all this craziness. I hope we're able to see all the games. I love when they Mike, and this has happened in the past, I'll make this joke, and again, Preds fans will roll their eyes, but there was a Predators game that went into overtime, and I'm trying to remember if it was during the Cup Final. It might have been during the Cup Final, but there was severe weather coverage, and they rolled the game over to Telemundo. So, because there were tornadoes ripping through Nashville at the time and the surrounding area, and so they moved the game, but the thing is, they didn't tell anyone. They just broke into the coverage and and it's not like they're running a crawl on the bottom of the screen or anything. Hey, the game's on Telemundo. They didn't tell anybody. So a lot of people couldn't figure out where the game was in time. It was interesting. So
I'm old enough now. This will really age me. I was old enough to remember the Heidi Bowl when the Oakland Raiders were playing in the playoffs, and they the network had an obligation to show the movie Heidi, and They jumped into the game and put the movie Heidi on. So that was the famous. That was the last time that sort of thing happened. But that's funny about the Nashville thing. It's reminiscent of what you and I had talked about earlier with the college hockey, where I watched that game on the Spanish channel, ESPN.
Yeah, because that's the only place it was consistently being streamed. Everything's a stream now. But, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Heidi Bowl game, because what happened there was not only did they preempt it, but the whole game went wild in the last couple of minutes.
They missed it was like one of the greatest playoff games ever.
and they missed it for Heidi. Yeah, and the whole game turned on a dime after they cut away from coverage. So
right, exactly.
Oh, man. Well, lessons learned, you hope, but nope, apparently not. Nashville, Telemundo, in case you need to know ahead of time. Check your Telemundo if the game gets bumped.
See, senor.
Yes. So, all right. Well, Mike, I think good place for us to wrap it up, and a good podcast for this week. And I'm sure we'll have more to talk about as the playoffs roll on here. But man, I can't wait till Sunday night rolls around, because now we're going to have so much more of a clear view of what's going on, but plenty to talk about so far. And this is going to be a great postseason.
Yeah, it should be. I'm, you know, a couple of years ago, you and I had to talk while they were in the bubble. And then last year was kind of a little weird too, because there was the big stop in the season. So this, you know, this is, we're just about back to normal, about 3 weeks later start than usual, but well, you know, we're back to normal, at least for the most part. And we're talking about hockey rather than COVID. So that I'm enjoying that a lot. Just strictly hockey, not what COVID protocols are for games.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been nice to worry about, you know, a little bit more of the typical things. And again, don't forget.
And the fans are there. And right, plus, Tom, it's fun to watch games where the places are packed and they're going crazy. Rather, I mean, that was brutal when we games we watched with the bubble, when there's nobody in the stands. Come on.
Well, and we saw it a little bit this year in Canada again, where stadiums were, you know, empty and quiet. Yeah. And it was just, it was weird.
So it's good to see everybody back in the place is packed, and you know, fans having a great time for the best in sports. There's nothing better than playoff hockey, and nothing better than, you know, watching that Rangers game in three overtimes. Oh my goodness, you're on the edge of your seat. There's nothing better to watch that.
So, I just want to say I'm thankful that was an East Coast game, by the way.
Yeah, I know, right? Past my bedtime, otherwise. But no, I'm looking forward to Sunday night. We get back on the show, and we'll really have a lot to talk about by then, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So as Mike just mentioned, Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. Pacific, Talking Puck TV. We stream live on Twitch, on Facebook, and on YouTube. So have a look for us there. And then, of course, the podcast. You like what you hear, please like, follow, and subscribe there as well. So, all right. Well, we're off to the next set of games here in this opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And so for Mike, I am Tom. Thanks for joining us, everybody. This has been the Talking Puck Podcast. Talk to you next time.